The following is provided through the IAAIS Program Share Service.
Welcome to this week's Soap Opera Digest. I'm Virginia Voice volunteer Pete Peek, reading today from the September 23rd issue of Soap Opera Digest to keep you up to date on all of your favorite characters and soap opera news. Here is your handy guide to the soaps the week of September 23rd. From The Bold and Beautiful, on Monday, September 23rd, Taylor visits a connection to reveal a secret. Steffi senses her mother has a secret on Tuesday, September 24th, but Taylor shuts her down. Meanwhile, Ridge confesses to Brooke that he made a promise to Steffi about Taylor. Bill reaches out to Katie on Wednesday, September the 25th, to talk about their future. And on Thursday, September 26th, Steffi and Hope try to get the better of each other regarding Ridge, Brooke, and Taylor, and Will attempts to make sense of the divide between his parents. On Friday, September 27th, guest star Yakul Juliason collaborates with Brooke's bedroom line photo shoot and performs his hit song, Way Down We Go, at the photo shoot. Steffi gets irritated when Finn and Hope share their love for JJ and his band, Kaleo. Bridget returns to town for the performance, and Taylor hurts as she watches Brooke and Ridge interaction on the live stream of the shoot. From Days of Our Lives, Jada realizes just how crazy Kynie is while Johnny and Chanel enjoy a romantic evening on Monday, September 23rd. Bonnie and Hattie clash on Tuesday, September 24th, while Chanel learns she has to be intimate with Alex. Brady and Eric catch up, and Maggie learns stunning news from Fiona on Wednesday, September 25th. And on Thursday, September the 26th, EJ and Eric have words about Holly as Xander admits his intentions to Sarah. Sarah reveals to Fiona that she remembered the night of the accident on Friday, September 27th, while Xander is thwarted by Jada. From General Hospital, Carly and Brennan have a loaded encounter on Monday, September the 23rd. Portia is on edge. Terry defends her decision. Elizabeth voices her doubts, and Curtis counsels TJ. On Tuesday, September the 24th, Carly and Sonny strategize. Alexis confides in her new lawyer. Chase and Dante butt heads. TJ opens up to Stella, and Diane runs interference. Sam visits Carly on Wednesday, September the 25th, as Sonny and Christina have a heart-to-heart. Jordan confides in Isaiah. Molly meets with Martin, and Ulrich makes a high-stakes offer. On Thursday, September the 26th, the walls close in on Jason and Anna. Tracy and Stella reconnect. Drew interrupts Michael and Willow. Ned receives shocking intel, and Lucky gets devastating news. Holly makes a bold move on Friday, September the 27th, while Tracy gloats. Lucy gives Natalia a history lesson. Carly meets with Brennan, and Robert and Diane go out on the town. And from The Young and Restless this week, Adam loses his cool on Monday, September the 23rd. Victoria works to protect Billy, and Audra encourages Sally to play dirty. Sharon is haunted by her dreams on Tuesday, September 25th. Heather and Daniel plan a fresh start, and Nick takes matters into his own hands. On Wednesday, September 26th, Sharon is triggered to explore her dark side as Nick and Mariah devise a plan to help her, and Phyllis takes control. Sharon's quest for revenge takes a dangerous turn on Thursday, September the 27th. The Young and Restless celebrates Sharon Case's 30th anniversary on Friday, September the 28th, as the character of Sharon looks back at her memorable moments. Also in this issue, interview exclusive, Days Cherie Jimenez on her real-life friendship with Julie Dove by Janet DeLauro. While there is no love lost between Gabby and her would-be killer, Connie, on screen at Days of Our Lives, actresses Julie Dove and Cherie Jimenez have totally bonded off-camera. Julie has actually become one of my really good friends, reports Jimenez. We have lunch at least once a month, and just catch up on life. She's absolutely wonderful. Julie brings such a fun dynamic to the set with her craziness and kookiness. We had a lot of fun just going back and forth. Also kind of started this journey on Days Together. Even though I know that she was on the show prior to me being on it, once I got hired, they instantly paired us up with her being my assistant. We've been there with each other within this whole dynamic of coming into soap world. So we had a lot of fun and really got to know each other. The bulk of it has happened behind the scenes. Everything moves so fast at Days, and we're given so much dialogue, so we always run lines with our scene partners, says Jimenez. And so within running lines, for me personally, I like to get to know the person that I'm working opposite. Julie and I have worked together so much that we've gotten to know everything about each other. Our life, our journeys, our acting journeys, our family, and our pets. Jimenez also appreciates Dove's long path to Days. Julie's been such a huge fan of the show, and then being an actor and pursuing this industry for the past 15 years, recounts Jimenez, getting the opportunity to be one of her favorite shows with her, a show that she and her mother watch, is such an awesome thing. So she and I just connected. She'll reach out to check up on me, and I'll do the same with her. We had a lot of fun on the set with our characters and our dynamic, and it developed into a great friendship. Also in this issue of Soap Opera Digest, an exclusive, meet GH's newest villain, Carla Rota, who plays Sidwell, by Mara Levinsky. Carla Rota has a prolific primetime career that includes high-profile roles on shows like 24 and Jane the Virgin. But he was a soap opera virgin until General Hospital tapped him to play the role of mega menace Sidwell, who has both Lucky and Holly on the ropes. It's just been a joy to go on the set every day, says the actor, who checked in with Soap Opera Digest about diving into daytime. Soap Opera Digest asks, you're far from a showbiz newcomer, but this is your first soap job. What has it been like thus far? Carlo replied, it's been a revelation to me. I thought I knew the business, but my first day on General Hospital, I realized, no, you don't know the business. You're a child, because it's just a different thing. It's a different animal, and the pace is breakneck. I said to Lisa Booth, who is casting General Hospital, I'm going to get T-shirts made, and they're going to say General Hospital on the front and Off Book or Die on the back. That's actor speak for having scripts memorized. It's really been exhilarating in many ways because of the pace and the fact that you're painting an image. And it's as if you've got one character to paint it, and then that's it. Whatever you put on the canvas, that's going to be your image. Because when you do shows in other mediums and in film, particularly, you can often just go, I need another take. I didn't get to where I wanted to go. But on daytime, there's just no time to do that. When I was told about it, I didn't quite understand it. And then that first day was just a blur. I came home. My wife was all excited. So how was it? She asked. What happened? I said, I can't tell you because I do not remember a thing. It was as if I was anesthetized for the hours I was on the set, and then I got home and didn't remember anything. And then on the following days, I started to get used to that pace and grappling with it, and then I actually started to enjoy it. It's like jumping off a cliff, and there's something about that that I find thrilling. I haven't felt like that kind of thrill performing in a long time. I liken it to the closest TV gets to being like live theater. I think unless you do it, you can't really understand this type of television show. I would watch daytime television and think, oh, okay, they just go in and do their thing, whatever. But no, it takes a sizable amount of skill. I mean, the people I'm working with, I'm actually amazed at how they're able to bring a performance that resonates. I marvel at their ability. They are fantastic professionals. They really are. Soap Digest asks, had the idea of you doing a soap opera ever come up before in your career? Rota responded, no, what happened was I auditioned for Frank Valenti, the executive producer, in October of 23 for a completely different role, and it was my first and last in-person audition since the start of the pandemic. Since 2020, they've all been either self-tapes or Zoom, mostly self-tapes, many, many, many self-tapes. My manager calls me and says, look, I have this audition for you for General Hospital. I know I went in, I met everyone. They were so welcoming, and I realized then how much I missed auditioning in the flesh, so to speak. It's just a beautiful event, you know. You're performing in front of people, in front of live bodies. You can actually hear a reaction. You can maybe hear some laughter. And the self-tape business removes you from that. Anyway, I went in and auditioned, and I loved the audition. I said, Frank, this is the first time I've auditioned in front of people in a long time, and I loved it. Thank you so much for having me in. But then, you know, nothing happened. Then, out of the blue, a couple of months ago, my manager calls me and says, oh, yeah, there's a role for you on General Hospital. I said, what? And then it went from there. My first day, everyone was super welcoming on the set, and I was lucky enough to work with Jonathan Jackson, who's been doing this for a long time, and honestly, I've loved it. It's been a joy to go on the set every day. The Digest asks, I've heard a lot of actors describe how confusing the flow of taping day can be to navigate at first. Were you like a deer in the headlights on your first day? Rhoda replied, that's putting it mildly. Lisa did spend a bunch of time on the phone with me, giving me the rundown on everything, and that was really an excellent way of easing me into it. So I knew a little bit about what was going on, but yes, you're right. Maybe deer in the headlights is putting it mildly. Because for the first time in a long time, I felt that beautiful feeling of anxiety and nervousness that you really do want, you know. It puts you on edge, and I feel you're always doing your best when you can ride that. And it disappears if you're just self-taping at home or if you're doing something that you've done before, and the pace is really slow. So this was actually a lovely feeling of anxiety. I don't know if many people feel that they feel a lovely feeling of anxiety, but I do because it just reminds me that I'm alive, and you want to feel alive when you're performing. You want to feel present. With Jonathan, he was very relaxed, and he was very aware of the fact that I may not have been so relaxed. So he was amazing, telling me, don't worry about this, don't worry about that, don't stress. My first few scenes with him were fantastic. Then, of course, with Emma, same thing. She was also incredible and very welcoming and aware of the fact that I was new. So there are great people to start working with. And then subsequent to that, I had scenes with Steve Burton and Finola. And again, these are phenomenal performers. They're at the top of their craft, and it's great to see and great to be thrust into a world where you can aspire. That's really what has been happening on set, you know. I go in, I look at them, and I go, oh, that's what I'm going to aspire to do. I'm going to aspire to be as present and to give that kind of performance in the allotted time. The Digest also asks, Emma Sams had some high praise for you when I last spoke to her. She said you play a nuanced villain and bring some shadow and interest to the character. Broder's response, that is a super high praise. I'm going to take that and put it in my pocket. I'm thrilled to hear that. The Digest also asks, tell me more about your experience with Steve and Finola. Broder's response, well, the more I get to know Steve, the more I realize he's an entertainment onion. There's like so many sides to him. He does his job fantastically on the show, but he's also performing in other things. And he has a podcast, and he does on-stage stuff, and he's a musician, and he's a comedian. But he brings all of that, and he really centers it. I feel like, with his character with Jason on General Hospital, and it's quite a fiery little center he's able to keep burning in the scenes that we have together. He's still, it's almost like he's an observer, and he doesn't say a great deal, but his presence is always palpable. It's always there. And then with Finola, I mean, she's amazing. She's got so much dialogue, which she delivers with such ease, and she also has this ability to lighten things up and reach different heights. It's really a pleasure sparring with her in that way, in the scenes we have, because we do have quite a bit of sparring coming up. I'm so impressed with the professional attitude they bring to this genre, this very special genre. They really do deliver the goods. It's great to see, and it's great to acting opposite them. The Digest also asks, I feel like you're getting an education in something daytime fans know, which is that even though soaps get made fun a lot of, there are some incredibly talented people working in the genre. Reuters response, I think there's a huge amount of snobbery involved in the belittling of this particular genre. You know, I've watched the show with my mother-in-law, who's visiting from Toronto. She's a huge fan of the show. She told me everything about who's doing what to who's had affairs with who, whose child this person is. She knows everything. And certainly there's no other medium on television that is as productive in terms of episode output, and there's so much stuff in them. There's so much to see. There's so many storylines to follow. I'm a convert. As you can tell, I'm completely converted. It's not that I belittled it before. I just never considered it. I've never watched it, and so I have no clue. I think people that want to speak out about it negatively often aren't people who are watching. I'm so impressed at the industriousness of this genre that they managed to make so much television in such a small amount of time. It's really quite amazing. The Digest also asks, let's chat about Sidwell a bit. How have you approached bringing him to life? Wrote his response, well, I should say that the majority of my resume has been me playing villainous characters. My mother, who I miss dearly, she would be like, Carlo, why are you always playing such a bad man? Why? And I don't know. It's something about my look, I guess. I like to sometimes say, maybe it's baldism, you know? That characters who are bald and who have facial hair and speak with an accent are quite necessarily evil. I don't know, but those are the roles that I have traditionally been given, and I have tried to make them as interesting as possible. The truth of the matter is, I think I've made a career of it, of playing the quote-unquote baddie. And when it comes to bad people, I think the real bad people of the world don't wake up in the morning and go, oh, I'm a bad person, I'm evil. They wake up in the morning and go, I'm just me. And they go about their business. You cannot be so evil in your outlook and in your demeanor that nobody approaches you. You have to be approachable, you know? And in fact, the real evil people of this world have often been the boy next door who you never think could do anything wrong because they don't look evil. So I've always tried to make the characters I play the opposite, sometimes to the writing. I want them to be approachable. I want them to be charming. I had an acting teacher in Toronto who gave me some great advice very early on when he said, you know, Carlo, you do present yourself physically as someone who could be quite intense and aggressive. So the best thing you can possibly do is just always, in the back of your mind, know that you have two young daughters at home and you're a loving father. I never quite understood it. I would try and do it. But then when I started having kids, I realized, yes, that's what you do. You're just a dad who loves his children. And then you go on set and you perform their writing. And hopefully the combination of the two means that the character, as the lovely Emma quite kindly said, is nuanced. The Digest also asked today, I was observing some of the comments General Hospital fans were making online when you started airing. A lot of them were very excited to have you on board because they recognized you from your other projects. What would you like to say to the GH fans out there? Rhoda's response, here's my message to the GH audience. I will attempt to respect and embrace you as warmly as possible in the confines of my villainy. Also in this week's Soap Opera Digest, an interview exclusive. Young and Restless, Joshua Morrow on Nick's Devotion to Sharon and Phyllis by Mara Levinsky. It's not that common in real life for men to be intimately involved in the goings-on in the lives of their ex-wives. But for Nick Newman, that's just another day at the Young and Restless office. The character is currently thick in storyline with two women he used to be married to, Sharon and Phyllis. Joshua Morrow, who played Nick since 1994, believes that Nick wouldn't have it any other way, especially now that Sharon is on a protracted downward spiral, having gone off her bipolar medication. Sharon leans on Nick for stability, the actor opines, and Nick is that person for everyone on the show. He wants to be the person that everyone can count on and come to when things are not going great. He relishes that role. He wants to help people and be that touchstone for them. And he usually is. Morrow doesn't think that the depth of Nick and Sharon's bond necessarily hints at them making another go at their relationship. At least not for now, he asserts. There's zero romantic anything with them, but they are incredibly close. They've turned into very good friends. Where this leads, who knows? You can sort of use your imagination and fill in the blanks on your own. But Nick knows how important he is to Sharon, and she really relies on him to help her through stuff. And that incredible history that these two characters have will only bolster Sharon, and he knows that. Nick, he helps me help you. Philosophy extends to Phyllis as well. No matter how much of a handful she can be, declares Morrow, I absolutely believe at his very core he's never going to turn his back on the people that really matter to him. And that includes Sharon and Phyllis. No matter where they're at in their lives, Nick will always be there for them despite everything that they put each other through, and especially in times of trouble. Sharon's clearly in a troubling spot right now, but he's never going to turn his back on either one of them or on his family. As I said, he likes sort of being everyone's rock. That's who he is, and I really like that about him. He takes very seriously the lessons that his father taught him, which is family before everything. Nick handles things way, way differently than Victor, but he will be the person that everyone can count on for the rest of his life. What does Morrow make of the current dynamic between Nick and Phyllis? Nick and Phyllis have such a unique relationship, he notes. I believe they get each other more than anyone in Genoa City. Nick understands that, and he knows what he sort of got himself into with her. She is a tomato and a whirlwind of emotions, and they've got a light sort of back and forth in their banter. The actor thinks there is still sexual chemistry between the characters as well. There's obviously, I think, always sort of electric attraction with them. And you know what's funny to me is, I always like to play Nick where he walks in and sees Phyllis, or especially when Phyllis is with Summer, like he knows he's about to walk into a tornado. He knows that this is going to be he is going to have to buckle up on a seatbelt because we're about to go for a ride. Morrow considers himself blessed to have been working closely with Sharon Case and Michelle Stafford for so many years. With Sharon and Nick's love story kicking off in 1994 and Nick and Phyllis's romance commencing in 2005, especially when all three characters are played in story together. It's my favorite story that I've been involved in this triangle, he says, and the fact that I get to continue to play it year in and year out with these two incredible powerhouses of talent in Sharon and Michelle. It's just incredible. And the writers are awesome about it. I mean, you can count on it every week. He's going to walk in and have moments with these two women that are just fun to play, and the audience loves it. Morrow observes that in this dynamic between the three of them, Nick turns to Phyllis for advice about Sharon quite often. I think that's because they're really good friends, but I don't know if he turns to Sharon ever for advice about Phyllis. And I have to believe that's sort of mired in the fact that Nick and Sharon were like these young true lovers, and that relationship has always been very different than it was with Nick and Phyllis. Concludes Morrow, Nick just really loves these women. Sharon and Phyllis, and he's never going to be able to completely turn the page, which is the problem with each of their relationships. You know, Nick is the issue because he can ever just say to one woman, yeah, the other woman is completely gone and she doesn't have a place in my heart. And I like that. I love that. That is always an issue. And Sharon and Michelle like it too. It's always going to be a problem. And that's what we want in the soaps. We want mess. We want problems. We want things to play. We want levels. And this triangle has stood the test of time, and it will continue to do that. And in our final story today, we have casting news. Valerie Pettiford joins The Young and Restless by Diane Brunstein. Valerie Pettiford, who got her start in daytime as Dr. Courtney Walker on Another World from 1988 to 1990, and went to play Dr. Sheila Price on One Life to Live from 1990 to 1994, is now on The Young and Restless, according to a Deadline exclusive. The actress has been tapped as a recast for a role that was previously played by Stephanie Williams. It's been 30 years since the character of Amy was on The Young and Restless scene, where she worked with Paul Williams and Andy Richards in their detective agency as their receptionist. She left town in 1988 to take care of her father, with Williams going on to join General Hospital as Dr. Simone Hardy. Pettiford, which will have a reoccurring player in Young and Restless for now, according to Deadline, and will first air on October 29th. There was no information given on what brings Amy back, especially since most of the characters she interacted with have left the canvas. But back in the day, Amy did run in the same circle as characters like Danny Romolotti, and Amy herself dabbled in singing. She was the daughter of Genoa City's police captain and was romantically linked to attorney Tyrone Lewis and Detective Nathan Hastings Sr., the father of Nate Hastings. Pettiford has been very busy outside of her soap turns. She's been known to grace the Broadway stage, where she was nominated for a Tony in 1999 for her role in Fosse, has a regular role on the BET Plus series The Family Business, as well as reoccurring roles on The Baxters for Amazon Prime, and appeared in films like The Cotton Club, Glitter, and Tyler Perry's Why Did I Get Married Too? With Janet Jackson and soap alumni Sharon Leal and Lamon Rucker, ex-T. Marshall Travelers, As the World Turns, ex-Garrett Williams, and All of My Children. And in our final story today, a flashback, Things That Happened on September 22nd in Soap History, by Mara Levinsky. Sonny left Brenda at the altar on their wedding day on General Hospital. Kate busted Sammy as Stan as she was poised to marry Lucas on Days of Our Lives. Jason and Sam tied the knot at the Buddha Noodle on General Hospital, and other major soap moments that took place on September 22nd. Thank you for joining me today for Soap Opera Digest. I'm Pete Peek for the Virginia Voice. This program is also available on demand at www.virginiavoice.org.